the Rogue Ghost, Episode 19. Infiltrating Vanessa Colby's storage unit was turning into quite the covert operation. The stakes were high, necessitating an approach that blended high-tech prowess with arcane subtlety. Under the dim glow, I observed Runeweaver as she summoned her array of hacker tools, while I wielded the enchanted music box, ensuring its melodies wove a protective cloak around us. Runeweaver's fingers danced across her devices with a fierce intensity as she wove complex spells of code that infiltrated the storage facility's security systems. It wasn't long before she triumphantly procured a keycard coupled with the access code to Vanessa's unit, a testament to her unparalleled skills in the digital dark arts. My mind was ablaze with the possibilities of what lay within that storage unit. What secrets did Vanessa Colby, a woman shrouded in as much mystery as any specter, keep hidden away? My heart pounded with the thrill of the unknown, each beat a drumroll, leading us closer to the revelations we sought. Welcome once more, fellow explorers of the Enigmatic. Join us as we delve deeper into the heart of our quest, where the web of cryptic mysteries entwines ever tighter with the essence of our saga. As we journey onward, the strings of destiny draw us inexorably towards the core of our enigma. In our last episode, our steps echoed within the ancient confines of Melodia Antica, a place where shadows of the past linger in every corner. The proprietor of this quaint shop of musical antiquities shared a haunting narrative steeped in loss. He revealed the sorrowful fate of Eric Richter, a composer whose potential was tragically cut short, and the enduring legacy that his music left behind. Yet, it was the heart-wrenching account of his twin sister, Karen, that gripped our souls, a life intertwined with calamity, now confined within the cold, echoing halls of a mental institution, her psyche fragmented after performing her brother's heart-stirring waltz in a concert meant to honor his memory. Now armed with this poignant knowledge, our journey does not pause but presses forward, more determined than ever. We stand on the precipice of unraveling the mystical secrets nestled in Vienna's veiled heart. But as we tread into the unknown, the shadows before us deepen menacingly, as if alive and conspiring to engulf us in their chilling embrace. The air thickens with tension, a palpable dread that suggests the paths we choose might lead to more than just hidden truths but could summon specters best left undisturbed.
Well, it seems we've stumbled upon quite an intriguing twist in our tale. As the Rogue Ghost eloquently recapped, we found ourselves in the charming little musical antique shop of Melodia Antica, where the owner shared stories of Eric Richter and his ill-fated sister, Karen. But it was what he revealed next that truly piqued our interest. According to our captivating host, around 5 years ago, there was a sudden surge of interest in Karen's story, particularly surrounding what was dubbed the Insanity Waltz. Now, let me tell you, when something gets tagged with a name like that, you know it's bound to be juicy. The internet went wild, turning Karen Richter into an overnight sensation and making this little antique music shop a hotspot for curious souls seeking a taste of the macabre. But it wasn't just idle gossip that drew us here. Oh no, we had a mission, and it was laser-focused on the original sheet music for Eric's waltz. The shop owner was tighter than a drum with his prized possession. He was adamant, no photos, fearing they'd splash across the web and steal the thunder from his star attraction. So, while RG kept our host busy with a charm offensive only he could muster, yours truly slipped into stealth mode. With the skill of a cat burglar, I managed to snap a few sneaky high-resolution pics of the sheet music using my phone. And before you go raising eyebrows, relax, it was strictly a professional heist, purely for the sake of unraveling this tangled web. But let's cut to the chase. The million-dollar question remains, what secrets are etched within the notes of Eric Richter's composition that christened it the Insanity Waltz, and how will they shape our journey moving forward? Only time will tell, but one thing's for certain, we're in for one hell of a ride. So buckle up, hold on tight, and prepare yourselves for the next chapter in our epic quest.
As Runeweaver delved into the virtual abyss, her fingertips danced a relentless tap across the keys in search of clues, I set forth on a different path. Guided by the locations in our new Shadowgate lexicon, I navigated through a series of lesser-known traverses, each gate bringing me closer to the serene expanse of the Lake District. Dr. Hawthorne's retreat, affectionately dubbed Tranquil Haven, nestled amidst the rolling greens and mirrored lakes, was a stark contrast to the tempestuous world outside its boundaries. The air there breathed a peace that almost felt tangible, a sanctuary crafted by her hands and steadfast heart. Upon arrival, the warmth of Dr. Hawthorne's greeting sliced through the chill of the morning air. She insisted I drop the formalities and use her first name, Cassandra, a gesture that drew the line between professional distance and personal care. Yet beneath her welcoming smile lay the solemnity of our shared concern. As we sat across from one another in her study, surrounded by books and the soft light of the morning, she updated me on Jenny's condition. Her words navigated a line between optimism and realism, illustrating the deep scars carved by the Cerberus Syndicate's manipulations. Guided to a secluded observation room, I found myself gazing through one-way glass at a tableau poignantly serene. Jenny, dressed in the simplicity of white linens that reflected the purity of the setting, was immersed in painting. Her hands moved with a grace that belied the turmoil beneath, each stroke of her brush adding color to a canvas burgeoning with vibrant flowers, a defiant splash of life against the backdrop of her internal struggle. Cassandra quietly detailed the journey they were navigating together. Jenny's days were a battle, each moment spent weaving together the tattered fragments of her psyche. The Syndicate's influence lingered like a shadow, constantly threatening to darken the progress they made. Yet, Cassandra's voice held a firm belief as she spoke of the resilience residing deep within Jenny, a core untainted by the darkness that had enveloped her. Standing there, watching her artistic expression unfold, I was struck by a profound sense of duality, the pain of what had been lost mingling with the hope of what might still be recovered. Her artwork, a vivid representation of growth and beauty, seemed to echo Cassandra's assurances that beneath the layers of conditioned responses and fabricated loyalties, the real Jenny persisted, resilient, and waiting. In that quiet room, watching her breathe life into her art, a powerful blend of longing and resolve stirred within me. Longing for the return of the woman whose spirit had once danced as vividly as the colors on her canvas, and resolve, fueled by the belief in her recovery, in the potential for her spirit to triumph over the specter of her past.
While RG was off tending to Jenny, there I was, diving headfirst into the digital abyss like a modern-day Indiana Jones, only my Temple of Doom was filled with endless tabs and forgotten web archives. As I dug through the murky layers of the Richter twins' past, hunting for any whisper of Karen's psychotic break or the infamous insanity waltz, I hit a wall of silence so dense it could make a mind blush. There wasn't a peep about this so-called social media craze anywhere on the web. It was as if someone, or something, had gone to great lengths to erase all evidence of Karen's condition and the existence of the challenge from the surface of the internet. But I wasn't one to be deterred by a mere digital blackout. So, armed with a healthy dose of caffeine and a stubborn streak a mile wide, I plunged into the shadowy depths of the dark web, where secrets didn't die, they just hid in deeper, darker corners. Navigating this clandestine realm was like walking through a digital haunted house, every corner turned could spring a trap. But after what felt like a lifetime of clicking through cyber cobwebs, I finally struck something. Not gold, exactly, but something equally electrifying. There, nestled between the threads of forgotten forums and hidden data dumps, was the key to our haunting melody, the story of the Insanity Waltz Challenge. What I found was a social media frenzy turned urban myth, spun out from Karen's tragic performance. Teenagers, always up for a dare, had turned playing the waltz of the calling birds into a chilling challenge. The game was simple: play the music at the stroke of midnight, and tempt fate. It was described as a musical game of Russian roulette, where every note played rolled the dice with sanity itself. The thrill was irresistible, and like all forbidden fruit, it drew a crowd. But what started as a bit of adrenaline-pumping fun spiraled out of control, morphing into a dark obsession for some that twisted the waltz into a sinister affair that seemed more like sick torture than a game. The stakes became chillingly real when the challenge claimed a casualty, a girl who danced too close to the edge of danger, and it wasn't long before the urban legend of the insanity waltz became a tale of warning rather than excitement. Following the tragedy, it seemed the whispers of this challenge and Karen's psychotic break were hushed, swept under the digital rug, and locked away in the darkest corners of the internet. It became a ghost story for the digital age, spoken of only in hushed tones, until now.
After catching up over dinner, our minds were fueled for the daunting task ahead. With the remnants of our meal cleared away, we turned our attention to the puzzle laid out before us, the cryptic sheet music of Eric Richter. Runeweaver's photos of the original manuscript sprawled across the desk, each note and symbol a tantalizing piece of the mystery we were determined to unravel. As I studied the intricate patterns of notes and symbols, a sense of urgency settled over us. Every irregular spacing, every subtle shift in dynamics, and all the bizarre notations seemed to whisper of hidden meanings waiting to be uncovered. But despite our best efforts, the music remained stubbornly impenetrable, its secrets locked away behind a veil of intrigue. Frustration gnawed at the edges of my mind, threatening to overwhelm me as we hit dead end after dead end. It was as if there was a missing piece to the puzzle, a crucial clue that continued to elude us, slipping through our fingers like smoke. Yet, even in the face of uncertainty, a glimmer of hope persisted. As I hummed the haunting melody once more, I felt a surge of energy coursing through me, a connection to something greater than myself. And when the lantern on our ever-faithful Christmas card flickered to life with a brilliant glow again, I knew that we were still on the right path.
So, yours truly took it upon herself to dig deeper into the enigma wrapped in a riddle that was Karen Richter. Armed with a silver tongue and a knack for deception that would make even the slickest con artist green with envy, I made a phone call posing as a medical student on a mission. I spun a tale about a research project so intricate it'd make your head spin. My so-called thesis partner and I were supposedly delving into the effectiveness of different therapeutic approaches for psychotic disorders. Smooth, right? But the real kicker? Our fictional thesis was about patients whose psychosis was linked to music. Now, picture this: Belvedere Psychiatric Hospital in Vienna, a fortress of medical professionalism. It was the kind of place that screamed discretion, perfect for our undercover antics. Dr. Eva Muller, the primary psychologist overseeing Karen Richter's case, became our unwitting ally in this high-stakes game of cat and mouse. Why go to such lengths? Because sometimes, to catch a shadow, you have to step into the dark. And hey, if it worked for Nancy and Robin in Stranger Things, why not for the rogue ghost and yours truly, right? So there we were, about to turn our shimmer ring personas, currently the fiery redhead and laid-back blonde surfer dude, into the ultimate dynamic duo of fake students. Let me introduce you to Amelia Flynn and Lucas Bennett, ready to conquer the academic world, or at least pretend to for a day. Now, morphing into Amelia and Lucas wasn't just about slipping on our hacked shimmer rings like usual. Nope, we needed the whole enchilada to make it through the fortress that was Belvedere Psychiatric Hospital. This wasn't just a stroll through the park, this place was locked down tighter than Fort Knox. So, I put together a dazzling array of forged documents. Fake student IDs? Check. Falsified student registration papers and a couple of very convincing class schedules? Double check. We were talking top-tier forgery here, the kind that would make any con artist do a double take. And just like that, with our identities snugly tucked into our back pockets and our stories polished to a high sheen, we were ready to breeze through those security gates as if we were the most legit med student researchers this side of the Danube. Armed to the teeth with nothing but our wits and a stack of bogus paperwork, we were set to infiltrate the hospital's inner sanctum. Just when I thought I could catch a breath and maybe enjoy a moment of calm, the universe decided to toss a curveball my way. As we were gearing up for our mad dash back to Vienna, my phone buzzed with a call that was about to add another stop on our adventure. It was Sentinel and Lock Secure Storage on the line, and guess what? They finally had a unit available, and it was calling my name. I seized that opportunity like a sprinter launching off the starting block, setting up an appointment faster than you could say mystery storage unit. But here's the kicker, this wasn't your usual sign up and go deal. Oh no, these folks wanted to see me in person, to show my face and sign on the dotted line. No shortcuts, no digital handshakes. You'd think we were dealing with nuclear launch codes, not a standard storage unit. But hey, if that was the game, then count me in. I was all about diving into the deep end, especially if it meant we got one step closer to untangling the twisted threads of Aunt V's past secrets.
With the knowledge of our Shadowgate lexicon guiding us, Runeweaver and I embarked on a clandestine odyssey through the more shrouded traverses. Our trek began in Sheffield, threading through the veiled routes that crisscrossed beneath the mundane surface of the world, leading us back to Liverpool, and then, through the mystical doorway nestled within St. James Gardens, onward to the historical heart of Vienna. As we emerged into the Austrian capital, the grandeur enveloped us once more, its imperial architecture casting long shadows in the afternoon daylight. Our ultimate destination, however, was far removed from the city's splendid facades. We approached the imposing structure of Belvedere Psychiatric Hospital, its centuries-old walls looming like a fortress of forgotten tales. Dr. Mullah awaited us with a certain gravitas, a commanding presence that few possess. With her sleek blonde hair pulled back sharply and deep blue eyes peering through her glasses as if dissecting your very thoughts, she exuded a blend of wisdom and warmth. This combination was both comforting and authoritative. Furthermore, her mastery of the English accent, tinged with the finesse of a seasoned traveler, hinted at her extensive international experiences. Under the guise of medical students, we clung tightly to our fabricated identities, spinning a web of academic intrigue and research dedication. Runeweaver had crafted our cover with the precision of a master playwright, ensuring every detail was irrefutable. Dr. Mullah, perhaps impressed or merely accustomed to eager students, accepted our story without a hint of suspicion, graciously leading us through the intricate corridors of the facility as if we were honored guests. Our anticipation built with each step until we were introduced to Karen Richter. The room we entered was a contrast to the clinical austerity outside. It was alive with an almost whimsical chaos, strewn with toys and dolls, each corner telling a story of a mind caught between eras. Karen herself was an enigma. Despite her advanced years, she moved with an unexpected vivacity, her actions painting the air with the colors of a ceaselessly imaginative mind. Her presence was like a breath of a bygone era, her energy undimmed by the confines of the room that seemed both her sanctuary and her prison. Dr. Mullah, observing our intrigue, shared that Karen's care was generously financed by an anonymous benefactor, a detail that tinged the air with mystery. She spoke of Karen's condition with a clinical detachment softened by genuine concern, explaining how, despite the best efforts and therapies, Karen oscillated unpredictably between her adult self and a childlike persona, a disconcerting dance between the present and a receding past. The piano in the corner of Karen's room caught my attention. It stood silent yet imposing, a testament to the lost melodies of a once brilliant musician. Dr. Mullah noted our interest, adding that sometimes, late at night, the haunting strains of a piano could be heard, though Karen was never seen playing. As Karen, lost for a moment in a tender interaction with her dolls, seemed to retreat further into her private world, a deep, resonant sadness welled up within me. Here before me was a soul who once mastered music with the finesse of a true artist, now navigating through the fragmented echoes of her past. The intensity of her plight, shrouded in the enigma of her continued care funded by an unseen benefactor, only thickened the layers of the mystery enveloping her. Observing Karen in her alternating states of present awareness and distant memory, I was painfully reminded of my beloved Jenny. Caught in a similar battle between who she was and the persona crafted by the syndicate's cruel interventions. The parallel between Karen and Jenny's struggles cast a shadow over my heart, underscoring the cruel fate that befell those touched by profound talent and tragic circumstance.
There we were, sitting across from Dr. Mulla, who started spilling the beans on Karen Richter's case as if she had been waiting for someone, anyone, to finally ask. She laid it all out, the treatments, the relentless attempts to crack the code of Karen's tormented mind, haunted by whispers of her deceased brother echoing secrets in her ears. It was the kind of chilling narrative that sent shivers down your spine but lit a fire in the belly of every mystery lover. Karen's life, since her psychotic break, read like a page ripped out of a spooky psychological thriller. She had been insistent that her dead brother Eric was still communicating with her, pushing her to finish a grand opus he never could. And here's where it got wild. She was convinced she had cracked some kind of code hidden within his waltz, a code that had led her on a treasure hunt for what she believed to be the ultimate waltz remix. You can imagine how our ears perked up at that. Could it be that Karen had unearthed the very cipher that had eluded us, hidden in the depths of her brother's enigmatic waltz? Dr. Mulla then mentioned something that almost made us jump out of our seats. Karen's diary. Described as a treasure book full of cryptic notes and what might seem like mad ramblings, it was tantalizingly positioned like a plot twist in a thriller. Karen was adamant she had stumbled onto something monumental, something that echoed beyond the confines of music and madness. Naturally, we were tingling with anticipation to get our hands on that diary. But, as was the way with patients' valuables, Dr. Mulla wasn't about to let it slip through her fingers so easily. She played her cards close, revealing that the diary was locked away, safe and sound, in the hospital's archive. Yet, perhaps sensing our genuine burning curiosity, or maybe swayed by our convincingly worried student facade, she offered to set up another appointment for us to delve into this mysterious journal. We leapt at the opportunity like thirsty travelers finding an oasis in the desert, eager and ready. The thought of getting closer to unraveling Eric Richter's mysterious code had us on edge, every nerve tuned to the high stakes of this psychiatric intrigue.
As our Vienna Odyssey momentarily receded into the backdrop, the aroma of mystery continued to saturate the air, compelling us to embark upon another shadowy excursion. This time, our destination was Sentinel and Lock Secure Storage, located not far from our Watermill Sanctuary. Leveraging the labyrinthine network of shadow gates, we navigated our journey, a scenic yet convoluted route from Sheffield to London, then darting through another portal back to Sussex. It was akin to traversing a sprawling maze, the long way around, ensuring our steps were shrouded in security. Maintaining our guise as medical students, Runeweaver brandished the identity of Amelia Flynn once more. With the finesse of a seasoned spy, she navigated through the storage facility's security protocols. Her forged ID and meticulously crafted paperwork sliced through administrative barriers like a sharp blade, securing her a lease on a storage unit. The secure facility was accessible around the clock, so without missing a beat, Runeweaver prepaid for 2 months, ensuring our access was beyond reproach. Our scheme was simple. Under the cloak of night, we planned to infiltrate Vanessa's unit. The storage facility, despite its perpetual hustle, promised a few quiet hours where shadows deepened, and internal surveillance that could be magically dodged. The suspense of our nocturnal operation was palpable. As the world around us succumbed to the tranquil lull of twilight, our hearts raced with the thrill of the impending breach. This wasn't just any clandestine venture, it was a dive deep into the personal archives of a woman whose life had been as enigmatic as the mysteries we chased. Yet, in the thrilling dance with danger, there's a stark reminder that nothing truly worthwhile ever comes without risk. And so, with the moon as our silent accomplice, we readied ourselves to unlock the vault of secrets that was Vanessa Colby's legacy.
As the clock ticked past midnight, RG and I once again found ourselves navigating the Shadowgate pathway towards Sentinel and Locke. This time, it wasn't just another recon mission. I was hauling a box supposedly full of personal effects to stash in my newly acquired storage unit. My heartbeat kicked up a notch the closer we got, not just from the weight of the box, but from the weight of anticipation. Upon arrival at the fortress-like facility, I was all business. I made quick work of depositing my so-called belongings, tapping in the security code on the keypad as if it were second nature to me. But let's be honest, the real show was just getting started, breaking into Aunt Vanessa's unit. But let me tell you, sneaking in wasn't going to be a walk in the park. This was high stakes, and it required a high-tech approach. Out came my trusty hacker toolkit, a compact bag of gadgets I'd managed to cobble together over the years. RG made sure the enchanted music box kept the CCTV off our backs as I worked my magic on the electronic lock of Aunt V's unit. With a few swift connections and a sprinkle of digital wizardry, the security system was eating out of my hand. It wasn't long before the sweet sound of success chimed, and we had it, a keycard and the code, our all-access pass to the mysteries Aunt V had left behind. My mind raced with possibilities of what we might uncover. Considering she had stipulated that the contents of her storage unit be destroyed at the end of the lease, the secrets locked within must be monumental, right? So, as the door opened, we stepped into what we expected to be a treasure trove of hidden files and secrets. Instead, the unit was unsettlingly barren. No filing cabinets, no boxes, nothing but empty space. My heart sank a notch, but then, in the gloomy back corner of the unit, something caught our eye. A peculiar anomaly stood silently, a lone white door, standing inexplicably at the far end of the unit, its frame bathed in shadow. It was a traverse.
Until next time, my kindred spirits, keep the flame of belief ever burning.